This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Last month, host Chris Rock slammed the Oscars for the award's lack of diversity. The Academy did not nominate a single person of color in any of the acting categories this year. So when Chris Rock took the stage, he got right to it.
Well, I'm here at the Academy Awards, otherwise known as the White People's Choice Awards. You realize if they nominated hosts, I wouldn't even get this job.
Searing critique or just a way for Hollywood to acknowledge its sins without changing its ways? We'll talk about that and what we've seen from Hollywood since the Oscars on this month's installment of Back Channel, Connecting Culture and Context. Joining me, as always, are pop culture experts Natalie Bullock Brown and Mark Anthony Neal. Natalie is a professor of film and broadcast media at St. Augustine's University. Welcome back, Natalie.
Good to be here, Frank.
And Mark Anthony Neal, a professor of African and African-American studies at Duke University, author of the book New Black Man and host of the weekly webcast Left of Black. Hello, Mark.
How you doing, Frank?
Good. Let me start with you. What are your thoughts on Chris Rock's performance?
You know, Chris was funny. I enjoyed it. It was entertaining. I know there are folks who were disappointed by his performance, but you look at 25 years of Chris Rock's career, Chris Rock is not a race man. Chris Rock is not progressive on gender. Chris Rock is just the kind of guy that in a Hollywood that presumes itself to be liberal, much like the university I work for, he was the perfect person to hold them accountable for some things. But they also knew that Chris was going to hold a whole bunch of other folks accountable.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What do you think, Natalie?
I think he was fairly funny, but I think Mark is exactly right that it's kind of unfair to expect that Chris was going to really bring the politics with his hosting and anything that he would say in addressing the lack of diversity and the lack of Black nominees. So I think that he went overboard. I think he was not quite on point in some of the things that he said, and I hope we'll be able to talk about
those.
Well,
let's talk about one of those now that I think is maybe one of those where some people at least think he went a little bit too far. Let's listen.
It's the 88th Academy Awards, which means this whole no Black nominees thing has happened at least 71 other times. Okay? You got to figure that it happened in the 50s, in the 60s, and Black people did not protest. Why? Because we had real things to protest at the time. You know? Too busy being raped and lynched to care about who won best cinematographer. when your grandmother's swinging from a tree, it's really hard to care about best documentary foreign short.
Is that what you're talking about?
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, exactly that. It's tasteless, especially the grandmothers swinging from trees. Yeah. And I think, when Chris says that we had real things to protest, that completely discounts everything that we've been dealing with in the past year, certainly in 2015, I read a statistic that said more unarmed African Americans were killed by police or vigilantes in 2015 alone than in the 60s. So he's wrong, number one. But on top of that, I think it lets the audience, this predominantly white Hollywood audience, off the hook when he says something like that, because absolutely we have things to protest. And the Oscars is not trivial. Mm-hmm. What is happening with no Black nominees and all the opportunities to nominate someone, that's not trivial at all.
And Chris is aware of this. I mean, Chris himself has documented his own experiences with being pulled over unfairly by police. So he was making particular kinds of choices. And again, Chris as the kind of, and because part of what we got to think about with Chris, Chris has always been a truth teller. And there is some discomfort to that, right? And the point that he's trying to make is legitimate. How it played out is a whole different kind of conversation.
Well, it does seem like that's what the performer does. You know what the applause line is, especially with a white audience. If you can say, hey, we're past it. It used to be a lot worse, didn't it? And then there was actual applause, right?
Right.
Well, that was when we had something to get. And then everybody said, so go ahead and shock us. Go ahead and use the shocking language that makes it sound like this is a real searing critique. But oh, wait a minute. You just said that was in the past.
Right.
And that's what we apply.
And there's always a a shifting index of how we read these things, right? I mean, part of when Chris talks about, you know, we know this occurred in the 50s and the 60s, you know, there wasn't even a presence of black actors in mainstream films in the 50s and the 60s that could have been nominated. There weren't any black cinematographers or directors that could have been nominated, at least in mainstream Hollywood film. You know, so we know that it has shifted, right? But that doesn't mean that folks shouldn't still be vigilant in terms of pushing back.
Absolutely.
And it's not that Chris Rock isn't aware of what you were talking about, Natalie, that there are very difficult problems that we're dealing with today.
This year, in the In Memoriam package, it's just going to be black people that were shot by the cops on their way to the movies.
So I guess that gets to the point that he's not terribly political. Obviously, there's a complete mismatch in some of what he's saying. But what about that? So what about enfolding into the program itself? This is the Oscars. It's about Hollywood. We're going to produce our own program. We're going to invite Chris Rock to be the host and say whatever he wants. Ultimately, it's a show, right?
I don't think we can ever expect the black host of the white Oscars to use that as a moment to do sustained social justice. I mean, that's just not, you know, there to make them comfortable with their guilt about what has happened, right? Again, this is you know, Hollywood is liberal in comparison to other institutions, but let's not pretend that Hollywood is actually liberal. And so these are all his friends that are in the audience. I mean, it played out the way exactly it would have played out, you know, by having Chris Rock as host. I mean, what I think is kind of interesting is that if none of this was going on, we probably would have still got the same kind of critique from Chris Rock, because that's what he does.
But in the context of what we're dealing with in this present moment, it falls flat because it doesn't go far enough. And I agree with Mark that Chris was doing exactly what he was supposed to do. But if you're going to address any of it, you got to come correct.
Well, maybe what you're supposed to do is boycott. And he was critical of those who did boycott, and he actually showed up. I mean, there is the question of whether or not you take the money and do the show, or you step aside and say, we're not going to be part of this. What do you think?
Well, you know, we don't know when Chris was contractually obligated to do this. I mean, our perceptions, of course, is that as soon as all this went down, let's go get a black host. As far as we know, Chris could have been contracted to do this 7 months ago, right? So that becomes a whole other question about contractual obligations that the public isn't aware of if he chooses to not host and what have you.
Right. But I think that, you know, I felt like it was good for Chris to be there. I prefer, because possibly if Neil Patrick Harris, as Chris says, you know, if he had not been asked to host, or if it had been left up to a nomination, Neil Patrick Harris would have been hosting. And I think that if that had been the case, you know, we wouldn't have gotten any sort of critique. But I think Chris also stepped over a fine line when he criticize those black actors who decided not to be there, like Jada Pinkett Smith and Will Smith. I think he, you know, clearly everyone is, they are entitled to their opinion. But I felt that what he said, you know, really for a laugh about Jada not being invited, and Will, you know, making a play at Will's acting skills, I guess, or at least for how much he's being paid for some really bad films. You know, I just felt like, come on, Chris, you don't have to do that.
But, you know, this is the thing, though, for me. You know, Chris, it's an easy target. You're right. But I also think that Black Hollywood is hedging their bets by talking about boycott as opposed to protest, right? Mm. Boycott, you know, suggests, well, I'm not coming. And yes, that's a level of protest, but that's very different than organizing, you know, outside the venue and what have you.
Right.
And of course, Black Hollywood is not going to do that because they still, in fact, do need to get hired, you know, as cinematographers and directors and screenwriters and as actors, you know, so they're hedging their bets also.
Right.
And in some ways, Chris is calling them on that hedging of the bet. If you're going to go after this, right, staying home is not the way to go after it. They're going to protest. Let's talk about protest in a real way.
Well, then there was the comment he made when he brought out four young Asian students or young Asian actors and made this comment.
As always, the results of tonight's Academy Awards have been tabulated by the accounting firm of Price, Waterhouse, and Cooper. They sent us their most dedicated, accurate, and hardworking representatives. So I want you to please welcome Ming Zhu, Bao Ling, and David Moskowitz. Yeah. It's okay, it's okay. Thanks, guys. Thanks a lot. If anybody's upset about that joke, just tweet about it on your phone that was also made by these kids. Okay?
Took a lot of heat for that one, too. What do you think?
Well, I... It's kind of rough because I Chris took pot shots at everybody,
mm-hmm.
you know, during the Oscars.
I mean, the Academy even apologized for that one.
Yeah, and I think that was appropriate. I think that if Chris had said, if it had been the other way around and someone had done that, you know, made a joke about black kids, that's stereotypical, you know, we would have lost our minds, mm-hmm. you know, so I don't think that was the best choice at all.
I mean, four black kids came out there in hoodies, and any joke that you could have made about that would have been...
Yeah, it would have been a problem.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, and not the least the fact, you know, you don't make fun of children
yeah.
in that context, which I think is
right.
probably more offensive than even the ethnic aspects
right,
of his joke.
That gets to... I'm going to take a break here and come back to but the anesthetizing effect of this kind of raw shock humor. I mean, on the one hand, it sounds like telling truth. On the other hand, does it have the power to numb us to the reality of it? Because we hear it so often. We'll take a break, let you think about that. My guest today, pop culture experts Natalie Bullock Brown, Mark Anthony Neal. Back channel, connecting culture and context. We'll talk about that. And the singer Nina Simone, a biopic and a documentary. We'll talk about that and much, much more on the state of things. From North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay with us. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Today's show is part of our series Back Channel, connecting culture and context with my guest pop culture experts, Natalie Bullock Brown and Mark Anthony Neal. Natalie, a professor of film and broadcast media at St. Augustine's University. Mark Anthony Neal, a professor of African and African American studies at Duke. Just before the break, we were talking about humor as truth telling, you know, using stark language and kind of shocking language to bring us the truth. And we can think about, you know, The Daily Show and other programs that are using humor to kind of bring us to the truth. But does it have a kind of anesthetic effect as well, a kind of, oh, we all had a good laugh and we can kind of walk ourselves past it, Mark?
You know, there's an element, for instance, of Chris Rock's art that reminds you of, say, someone like Andrew Dice Clay, who at least in the context of thinking about gender relations, you know, told some truth-telling, some of it very misogynistic and sexist. I think there is a possibility that we start to not take this stuff as seriously as it is. But for every Chris Rock, there's a John Oliver. And, you know, and John mm-hmm. Oliver is absolutely killing it, you know, whether we're talking about the NCAAs or Hollywood or a range of things. So it really does come down to an individual and their particular skill set. And Chris, in that regard, is limited. Chris is going to be Chris. They knew exactly what mm-hmm. they were going to get by hiring Chris. Mm-hmm. You know, and for... You know, if you're a black audience member and you're someone who's concerned about that, well, you know, you think about the fact the other option could have been Kevin Hart.
Right.
Let's move on to the Oscars and some of the categories. Talk about one category in particular, Best Documentary. This year, the documentary about singer Amy Winehouse took the award. Let's play a clip from that film.
She would tell me stories about Blake and this tempestuous, extreme relationship. That first day she wrote Back to Black, all the lyrics and the melody in 2 or 3 hours.
He left no time to regret me and my head high and my tears dry. Get on without my guy.
Mark Ronson and Amy Winehouse from the Oscar-winning 2015 documentary Amy, My guests are pop culture experts Natalie Bullock Brown and Mark Anthony Neal. And certainly the Amy Winehouse story is an incredible story, and it was a good film, but there's a certain irony in that particular
There's an incredible irony in that, you know, Amy Winehouse is not even legible without Nina Simone in the room. Nina Simone's documentary was also, you know, nominated for an Oscar. And it speaks to a couple of things, right? The value that the critical establishment and other folks place in individual artists, that more people know who Amy Winehouse is than know who Nina Simone is as criminal. And that's how that gets played out in the Academy Awards. You know, Amy Winehouse is a story that they know. Amy Winehouse is a story that circulated on social media. The only time we talk about Nina Simone these days is in the context of a biopic that's being made. And so for me, it's like, you know, how in the world can we have a moment where the person who isn't even able to exist without this previous person actually wins an award? It's
well,
amazing.
Tell us more about that, Natalie, the documentary, What Happened to Miss Simone?
Well, it's directed by Liz Garbus, who is a documentary filmmaker who's done many films and has also been nominated for Oscars. In fact, I think she won an Oscar for her film about Bobby Fischer. I think What Happened to Miss Simone is a very nuanced look. I mean, I think it could have gone even further than it does, but I think it's a very interesting and revealing look at Nina Simone that, especially with the weight of her own daughter's words, you know, throughout the film, really gives us an understanding of who Nina Simone was and some of her demons.
Well, let's listen to a clip from that film. And here is her daughter, Lisa Simone Kelly, from the film. What happened to Miss Simone?
When she was performing, she was brilliant. She was loved. She was also a revolutionary. She found a purpose for the stage, a place from which she could use her voice to speak out for her people. Get in my way. But when the show ended, everybody else went home. She was alone, and she was still fighting. But she was fighting her own demons, full of anger and rage. She couldn't live with herself. And everything fell apart.
That's a clip from the Oscar-nominated 2015 documentary, What Happened, Miss Simone? My guests are pop culture experts Natalie Bullock Brown and Mark Anthony Neal. Certainly, it's a compelling story. Natalie?
I just wanted to talk about these demons because they need to be placed in context. So when her daughter, when Simone Kelly says that Nina went home and she was fighting and she was still fighting her demons and she was full of rage and anger. Let's be clear that the anger that she was dealing with was from being told from a very early age that she was too black, her nose was too big, her mouth was too wide, that basically she would not amount to anything and she wouldn't be able to achieve the goals that she had set out for herself. So, yeah, I would be angry, too. But what she does is she transmutes all of that pain into this amazing, amazingly brilliant artistry that, you know, I think that's what Mark was getting at. Like, we would not have that kind of creativity and brilliance in an Amy Winehouse without Nina Simone forging that way before her.
Right.
And I think, you know, that's the problem, even though I haven't seen it because it hasn't come out yet. But if I look at the trailer for the Nina biopic, you know, that's I think, a part of what people are really struggling with is how do you contain the brilliance and all of the everything that Nina Simone represents and all that she was bringing to the table in this performance that is, you know, rife with all the things that Nina was fighting against throughout her entire life.
The anger that Natalie talks about even places into even more of a context, right? You know, she found in her husband at the time somebody who could guide her career, who recognized also her brilliance and understood that it needed a wider stage. But the only way that he could figure out how to do that was also by being abusive, right? So when she's fighting, when she goes home, I mean,
she's literally fighting
That's you know, with her husband, right? And those are the kind of things that get lost in some of the nuances, you know, obviously in talking about her story.
It's a very, it's an incredible story. And part of the pain and the anger is around the fact that her initial aspiration and perhaps eternal aspiration was to be
a classical pianist.
Yes.
And that's what was cut off from her. So possibly a jazz performer. Yeah, and that's what she aspired, that's what she finally achieved. But that's not what she wanted, and she was being held out of that category. But let me ask you something, Mark, about something you said earlier. I mean, the story is compelling. And perhaps more compelling than the story of Amy Winehouse. But is it possible that the film wasn't as good? I mean, that's what the Academy is looking at.
And that's always what we have to consider. But I also think that when we look at what the Academy looks like and who's voting on these awards, I think black bodies in a documentary film just look differently than white bodies
Absolutely.
In a documentary film, right?
Absolutely.
I think especially when you're talking about a director in the case of Nina Simone, where it's not a black director. I think that's just the reality of it, right? And again, very often when we hear these conversations, particularly in filmmaking and documentary filmmaking, right, what always gets said that ultimately on some sort of technical aspect, right, some sort of aesthetic aspect, that black film doesn't hold up to the way that white film is, right? But if there are no black folks there who are credible to also talk about what that value looks like, then, you know, it's just a reproduction of whiteness in that regard.
Right. And I think that also, you know, Nina Simone is not a she's not someone who is embraced by the mainstream. I mean, even if everyone knew about her, the fact of the matter is that as she went on in her life and began to be extremely politicized and was not silent about how she felt about what was going on during the civil rights movement, what was going on in her own life. She was very vocal about what she was observing in the culture and how black people were being treated. And so, you know, she's not a favorite daughter
right.
of America in that sense. So it kind of makes sense to me that if you're going to be, you know, looking at Amy Winehouse, even with all the drug use and you know, just the bad girl sort of imagery of this incredible artist, Nina Simone is going to pale in comparison to Amy Winehouse.
You know, which gets to, I think, issues around the biopic and the choice of having Zoe Saldana, you know, play Nina Simone. You know, one of the issues I think the filmmakers were challenged with is that, you know, as Natalie just mentioned, you know, Nina Simone is not a well-known figure. She's well-known between particular kind of cultural segments.
That's right.
Right, a 1960s white liberal segment and African-Americans who were deep into cultural arts. You know, they could not cast someone who was less well-known than Nina Simone to play that role. That's just the reality of it. In that context, I don't think the film gets made, regardless of what the film might look like.
But you know what? Mark Lamont Hill, who is a regular on regular commentator on CNN, said this, which is, you know, that as hard as it is for black women, dark-skinned black women, to get roles in Hollywood, they can't even get roles.
Right, right. That's real. That's
playing
that's,
dark-skinned that's black real. Women. So if Viola Davis or Angela Bassett or Audra McDonald or any number of talented, well-known black actresses couldn't play that part, then we're in a lot of trouble.
I mean, Viola Davis is an interesting case here, and we don't know whether or not she was ever involved in the conversation. But, you know, when we see the clips from the film, this is not a young Nina Simone.
Right.
Right? This is an older Nina Simone who's probably around the same age that Viola Davis
right,
is
right
right, now.
Right, right.
Yeah, but it's also incredible to me that because this is Hollywood's quintessential story, right? The underdog who makes it, fights incredible odds, fights the stereotypes and somehow either wins the day or loses. It's a tragic story. Or it can be a heroic story, but in any case, it's that courage to soldier on. This is Hollywood's bread and butter, and they still can't tell it using the phenotype that is right. that just runs against, and that is a dark-skinned black woman who, by the way, whose physique also rankled. She didn't look female enough for a lot of people.
That's
and
right.
That was a complaint that people had as a performer on stage. You know, if you're going to be, you should be a If you're going to be a jazz performer, you need to look prettier than all of that.
Right, right.
And her absolutely aggressive stand on race and would not step back violated anybody's sense of what a woman should be doing, especially even within that movement,
right,
even
right,
in the
right.
civil rights movement.
But it doesn't seem that at least in the biopic for Nina Simone, that the director and those who were in positions of power to tell this story actually really took the time to understand the nuances of who Nina Simone is or was. And I think I think we see that happening often when white directors or even screenwriters take it upon themselves to tell black stories, because it requires that you do a level of research or at least surround yourself with people who know more than you do, because if you're not black, then you don't know that experience and you can't talk about it. You can't represent it in a way that is going to be authentic. Right. And I think that, you know, that more often than not, that is what appears to happen, is that there's this right. presumption of knowing that just doesn't ring true when the film comes out.
And that goes for Ray Charles. Right. That goes for Muhammad Ali's story. That goes for Jackie Robinson's story. You know, it goes for Jesse Owens' story.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The
That's
same
right.
kind of dynamics.
That's right.
Well, what about Zoe Saldana, who took the role ultimately after having sort of turned it down for a while? There's been a lot of criticism of her for taking the role. They've darkened her skin. They've widened her nose to make her look a little more like Nina Simone. And here's what she said to the critics who say she shouldn't have taken the role.
I'm doing it for my sisters. I'm doing it for my brothers. And I don't care who tells me that I am not this and I am not that. I know who I am. And I know what Nina Simone means to me. So that is my truth, and that set me free.
Zoe Saldana speaking with Hip Hollywood last month. Pop culture experts Natalie Bullock Brown, Mark Anthony Neal are with me today. What about that, Mark? Again, almost this gets back to the Chris Rock critique. I mean, do we criticize the actress for taking the role, or are we more critical of a structure that simply will not allow a woman who looks like Nina Simone to be the star of any kind of film?
If I'm separating Saldana's race politics from just who she is as an actress, she's crazy not to take the role, right? Because I suspect whatever critiques we might have of the film, I suspect she kills the role. And this will be obviously a springboard for her career. You know, whether or not you want to say to an up-and-coming young actress that, you know, you shouldn't take this role because of the race politics, right? She may not never, ever get another chance to get a role of this kind of substance. Because whatever we want to say about, again, what the film's going to look like, we know that Nina Simone is a character of substance. And I can't imagine any actress worth her salt deciding that she wasn't going to do that if she believes that she has the chops to do it.
We're listening to Back Channel today on The State of Things. Natalie?
So I agree. I hear what Mark is saying, but at the same time, I feel like, you know, I'm not really mad at Zoe Saldana for taking the role. I think that, you know, yeah, there's so few roles for African-American actresses. This was a great opportunity for her. But if you're going to take a role that where you recognize immediately that the experience that you're going to be portraying is not your own, I don't know. I feel like, you know, there is something to be said about thinking about whether or not I'm the right person, whether or not it would make sense for me to step aside for someone who does who not only is suffering like I am from a dearth of roles, but also, you know, may be able to speak to who Nina Simone was. If she's saying, Zoe is saying in the clip that we heard that, you know, I know who I am, and that she, you know, feels something, some kinship with Nina Simone. For me, like, I know what Nina Simone is talking about. I know what Nina went through because I've gone through it. You know, I'm not sure that Zoe Saldana can say the same thing.
Was that really fair for, I mean, I'll let you finish, Mark,
but
isn't that what acting is all about? Acting is all about not having to have to go through the experience.
You know, I hear Natalie's point, and it makes me wonder, it's like, well, you know, how do we feel, for instance, about David Oyelowo, right, who did was not raised in the American South like Martin Luther King was able to portray. I mean, if we're going to be honest, in Selma, right, if we're going to be honest about, you know, black actors at this moment, if there's a film being made about an African-American male, you can rest assured that one of those African actors, those Afro-British actors is going to get the role because they're simply killing the game because they're great actors. You know, even someone like Poitier didn't have an American experience, right? He grew up in the Caribbean. So on the one hand, right, it is this question about, you know, what your chops are and whether or not you can do it. If I have a critique of Zoe Saldana, I'm like, if I'm going to play this role, I'm going to play this role, right? I don't want you to do the thing with my nose. Right. I don't want you to darken my skin.
Right.
She might not have had the power within the relationship with the directors to push back in that way because we have lots of examples. I mean, you know, Malcolm X was much lighter. Than Denzel Washington was
Malcolm X.
Right.
Well, so that gets to, I mean, but it's interesting because you point to two different ideas here, that two different streams that run through Hollywood. Number one, if you've got the chops, you don't have to have the experience of the, that's what an actor does. They can do it. But as Ta-Nehisi Coates pointed out in a recent Atlantic article, there's no way that Zoe plays Marilyn Monroe. So phenotype does make a difference in Hollywood. That's what screen tests are all about. And looking like what the audience is going to accept has a lot more to do with it than looking like the subject.
Yes. And the reason why this is such a hot topic in among black people is because of colorism. And colorism is basically, you know, this hierarchy within the black community based on skin color. The lighter you are, the more you are seen as approaching white, the more privilege and status and so forth. You know, that it's a painful issue for a lot of people. That are dark skinned and light skinned within the African American community. But it's real. And the reality is when a white filmmaker selects a light skinned black actress to play a dark-skinned role, a woman, you know, and embody that character, what it does is it reinforces this idea that, okay, you know, even though I'm out here and I'm a Viola Davis or I'm any number of dark-skinned black actresses, I'm still not good enough to even play who, you know, I someone that I can relate to, that whose experience is similar to mine, because Hollywood is looking at my skin color, or at least they're looking at something other than what I bring to the table.
Back channel today on The State of Things with Natalie Bullock Brown and Mark Anthony Neal continues after this. Stay tuned. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Today, back channel on The State of Things with pop culture experts Natalie Bullock Brown and Mark Anthony Neal. Natalie, a professor of film and broadcast media at St. Augustine's University. Mark Anthony Neal, a professor of African and African-American studies at Duke and the host of the weekly webcast Left of Black. We've been talking about the new biopic about Nina Simone called Nina. Recently, another biopic was released about Olympic athlete Jesse Owens. The movie's called Race. How does that story either mythologize or tell the truth about the life of Jesse Owens, do you think, Mark?
Of course, it centers on, you know, his winning of gold medals in Berlin in 1936. And so the film does tell that story as truthfully as it can. What the film dismisses really is the reality of kind of racism in the United States that Jesse Owens had to deal with, putting rather out front, obviously, the case of Nazi Germany. I was struck by the fact that, you know, as someone who knew the story, and I'm there with my youngest daughter watching this story, who knew some of it also, the thing that I left race thinking about actually was the rise of Donald Trump. It lays out, when you think about the kind of rise of a Hitler figure, some of the signs that I see in the film are things that I'm seeing at Trump rallies now. So I think the film is timely in that regard, but it's also very dismissive of the reality of what white supremacy looks like in the United States. It doesn't talk about what life was for Jesse Owens when he gets back from the Olympics. You know, how you do a film like that and you never capture what's really the iconic moment in his career post-Olympics, you know, when he's out there racing horses for a living. You know, that's the story that you have to tell, that you can win gold medals and not, you know, be like the first Olympian not to meet with the president, you know, because you were black, you know, having to go to your own dinner ceremony behind, you know, in the back. And then to make a living, you have to raise horses. I mean, if you're going to tell the Jesse Owens story, you have to tell that part of the story also.
I think, what Mark is talking about, it harkens back to pretty much a lot of what we've been discussing in terms of who gets to tell these types of stories and the extent to which we should hold filmmakers accountable, especially if they have not lived that experience, to getting the story right or to, telling as much of the story as they possibly can. And it seems to me that that happens a lot when you're dealing with a film that tells a story of an African American and race is at the center of that story. There's always some sort of distraction away from how race figures in America, because, you know, that's what we continue to grapple with. That's what we haven't really addressed in this country. And so it never really gets addressed anywhere else.
I mean, part of what Natalie says, I was talking to my colleague Stephanie Dunn, who teaches at Morehouse College, and she's there down there with the filmmaker Julie Dash. And she and Julie Dash were talking about the film, and Julie's like, there's not a black filmmaker that does not start that film with that horse race and then look back, right? Because that's such a critical part of our critical understanding of how you can be successful and actually wear the gold for the U.S. and still be treated like a third-class citizen, racing an animal.
And the story is told, and the story is often told and received in this country as this great triumph over Nazism, where the United States proves that it's great credentials on race, and we're not like them. And I think it's some of that is portrayed in this scene with Jesse's coach, as Jesse has had a lot of pressure from black community not to participate, a little bit about what we talked about earlier, and is now thinking about not going to Berlin. And here he is with his white coach.
You got a chance to be a part of history, and you're going to walk away from it, huh? Throw it away?
Look, I got people looking at me for an example.
What do you mean, people? What people? Black people? Come on, I don't give a about any of that.
Yeah, well, you're white. You don't have to.
And that is the way certainly the story is received, is that there was this great menace abroad and they do these things. But here are our athletes who get to participate.
Let me tell you what that film was for me. And this is also reflects on our conversations about the Nina Simone film. That film was a coming out party for Jason Sudeikis. I watched that film, and what I realized is that this is someone who actually has some chops. And this is the moment where his career is now going to transition into this other kind of moment, right? Mm-hmm. The film, the telling the story of Jesse Owens was a vehicle for a white Hollywood actor, right, to be able to get better and more significant roles going forward. And I think too often that's the case.
Well, that's another part of the story, which is that the producers and director of this film felt they needed to have a white co-star in order to make this thing sell abroad.
Well, you know, can we just talk about Miles Ahead and the fact that Don Cheadle says the exact same thing, that he could not get funding for Miles Ahead to be made without inserting a white co-star, you know, a white sidekick, essentially. And, you know, that's the fact that someone like Don Cheadle, who's been in the industry for as long as he has a, from what I can tell, a really stellar reputation, takes on this type of story and then can't get it made without putting some, you know, without creating a character, you know, that speaks to Oscar so white. That speaks to why Hollywood continues to struggle with not only doing something about the lack of diversity, but understanding why they need to do something about it.
And this is the thing about McGregor. Half of his screen time is spent, you know, almost all of his screen time, half of Don Cheadle's screen time is spent with McGregor next to him, right? It's like Lethal Weapon, right? Lethal Weapon to a jazz soundtrack, right? It's a buddy movie. You know, it turns Miles Davis's life into a buddy music, right? And of course, what we know about Miles Davis with the film really doesn't deal with in a whole lot of significant ways. But, you know, Miles Davis didn't necessarily wasn't all that warm and fuzzy about white folks.
Right.
You know, no. So to treat his life as a buddy film,
right.
I'm sure, you know, all the MFs that Miles says in the film,
right.
The actual Miles Davis is watching this film going somewhere and saying MF 55 more times.
Right.
Here's a movie. Here's a clip from the trailer from the biopic Miles.
If you gonna tell a story, come with some attitude, man.
Miles Davis. My name's Dave Braden, Rolling Stone magazine.
I'm here to do your comeback story.
Okay, move back a little bit.
Yeah.
Don't send people to my house.
You have new material.
My material. My session tape.
You're under contract here.
We actually own that tape.
Miles!
You own? How much money you got on you? Okay, you're about 19,000 light, but that's a start. I moved to New York, met some cats, made some music.
Studied piano too, huh?
Nah, just woke up black, knew how to play.
You're black?
The music don't move on and it's dead music. It's all about improvisation.
That's a clip from the upcoming movie Miles Ahead. My guests are pop culture experts Natalie Bullock Brown and Mark Anthony Neal. So there it is, Don Cheadle playing. Well, what about the idea that, okay, the only way we can tell the story, and let's say in this milieu, in this world that we're living in, the only way to make this a commercial success is to buddy him up with Ewan McGregor. And so then there they go. But, you know, is it a way to get the story out? Do we tell a story and is the story well told? And if it becomes a commercial success, at least we've been able to tell the story.
I think that's important. I mean, we have to remember about Miles, this Miles Ahead film. Don Cheadle, you know, literally had to do a kind of Kickstarter thing with it, right? You know, there was no traditional Hollywood money behind this. You know, he had to hustle to have this made. And so he had to make certain kind of concessions, right, to be able to get it, you know, into the festivals, be able to get it into some sort of kind of mainstream release. I think we always have to support these films, whether or not we're talking about race, and ultimately, even if we're talking about the Nina Simone film, as black audiences, we have to support these films because if we don't actually go out and support them, the films don't get made. You know, even the bad ones. And at least if we show some level of support, because, you know, part of the challenge with the Zoe Saldana piece and her casting in the Nina Simone film is that, you know, if there were more roles actually for actresses, black actresses, then they wouldn't all have to fight over, you know, the one or two opportunities that occur, right? Ultimately, this is about opportunity in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to go back to
the lack of it.
I'm going to go back to the race film, the biopic featuring Jesse Owens' life, the pressure he faced. And again, a thread that's been making its way through this entire conversation, which is, when do you participate and when do you hold back? And certainly that was a pressure that faced Jesse Owens as he considered the choice of whether or not to go to Berlin. Let's listen.
On behalf of Mr. White and his organization and the Negro community across America, I hope you don't go.
But this is the Olympic Games. I mean, Jesse been training for this his whole life.
Jesse, you're the best. You have a chance to strike a powerful blow. I know that it must sound hypocritical for any American to talk about racial bigotry in other countries, but that is the whole reason we must not go to these games. We've got a chance here to show our solidarity with the oppressed people of Germany.
It's a clip from the 2016 movie Race. My guests are pop culture experts Natalie Bullock Brown, Mark Anthony Neal. I mean, I guess what's in play here, maybe the tension between a kind of gradualism, maybe we're getting a little bit better, so let's just show these films and hope that the next time we get a black producer and director, get a little more authenticity. Or do we say, no, until this thing is done right, we have to withhold our support. There's too much at stake.
I mean, it's an interesting question. You know, while the clip was playing, I was thinking, you know, Jesse Owens was the only, I mean, he was the only black track and field athlete right. at that time who could go to the Olympics right. and actually represent us in a way that, is that right? I think, yeah, at least on the level that he was right. running. Right. He was the only one who could do that, right? We're at a time now, like if we come forward and we look at Zoe Saldana, again, I'm not really mad at her. I get that, this was a great part. But how amazing would it have been if she had said, you know what, I appreciate the fact that I'm being considered for this role, but I really think you need to think about somebody else. I think there are other actresses who could do this role even better.
But Mark, aren't we making gradual progress, or is there a kind of a two steps forward, one step backward, or worse, one step forward and two steps backward?
I think there is a gradual progress, but that also means that doesn't mean that we hold up in holding institutions accountable to do the right thing. The reality is that, there shouldn't be one Nina Simone movie. There needs to be multiple Nina Simone movies. There needed to have been Miles Davis movies
long ago.
Right. There needs to be a John Coltrane. I mean, we could go on and on, right? Though we can be honest, right? We haven't seen a good Elvis film yet either.
And do we want to?
Is there one?
Right, a bunch of TV movies, right? But we haven't seen a Hollywood movie.
Right.
You are listening to Back Channel today on The State of Things. My guests are Mark Anthony Neal from Duke University, Natalie Bullock Brown from St. Augustine's, and we're talking today mostly about film. And let's switch subject a little bit. We've been talking about live action movies, but now to the world of animation and Zootopia. Mark, tell us, you've seen it. What do you think? I mean, here's a film that purports to be about, acceptance.
It's a Disney film, mm-hmm. and if you were to go by the trailers, you would miss what was happening in this film. There's a moment very early in the film, and the main character is a female bunny rabbit who is moving to the big city to integrate the police force.
Oh, let's listen. We've got that right here.
Excuse me? Down here? Hi.
O.M. goodness. They really did hire a bunny.
What?
I gotta tell you are even cuter than I thought you'd be.
Ooh, you probably didn't know, but a bunny can call another bunny cute, but when other animals do it, it's a little...
I am so sorry. Me, Benjamin Clawhauser, the guy everyone thinks is just a flabby donut-loving cop stereotyping you. Oh.
It's okay. Oh, you've actually got... There's a...
What?
In your neck, the fold, what? The... there's...
Oh, there you went, you little Dickens! Oh.
I should get a roll call. So, which way do I...
Oh, bullpen's over there to the left.
Great. Thank you.
Aw, that poor little buddy's going to get eaten alive.
Clip from the 2016 movie Zootopia. Mark Anthony Neal?
You're about 10 minutes into the film where you realize she's being hired as part of the mammal inclusion program. And you're like, wow, this is brand new, right? This is them talking about affirmative action, right? Yeah. They're talking about stereotyping. They're talking about folks being... reproduced in the imagination of the animal kingdom as predators and super predators, right out of Hillary Clinton's, textbook. Yep. It's an extraordinary film in that regard. Now, they think there are limits to it, obviously, but to the extent that the best conversation that you will watch about race and white supremacy and privilege in America right now is a Disney animated film, speaks a great deal about them taking a certain kind of risk and to some extent actually pulling it off very successfully.
And it might have, you think it had to be an animated film to take on? Because this really does purport to take on structural racism, some of the real embedded foundational causes of racism in this country, not individuals.
Yeah, I don't think you could make a film like this with live actors and have it have the kind of impact that it has, right? So in some extent, right, we don't have to deal with, white guilt in the context of the film, right, because there are no quote-unquote white people in the film that way.
Mammal privilege.
I just want to insert something that came to mind while we were listening to and talking about the Miles Ahead film. And that is something that Louis Armstrong was quoted to say when he was beginning, kind of at his heyday. And that is that, he had just gotten this white manager whose name is escaping me. But Louis said that, every Negro needs to have a white man behind them who's going to say, that's my N-word, right? I think that, you know, that's, at the end of the day, that's like what we are seeing. Even in Disney, we're seeing this need for basically white co-signing of our stories, of stories that deal with race, that of stories that are going to somehow pick at the systemic forces that oppress. And, you know, I think we got to do something about that, because that, you know, if that's going to be the case, I mean, that's essentially what Don Cheadle said,
right.
You know, and this is 50 years later, 60 years after Lewis said this thing. So I think we have, you know, Hollywood has to reckon with the fact that they've got a lot of work to do. Like Mark said, there are so many stories, not only of African-Americans, but all kinds of people of color that do not get told because they don't seem to, you know, register in the white imagination. And we've got to get past that.
Upending the well-received narrative in America. And that's yes. The dangerous part. Mark Anthony Neal, Natalie Bullock Brown. Back channel on the state of things. Thank you so much. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.